From one into two, as we said, the one commonality, and maybe this will be the first one we talk about after we get to the format of it, of course, the Mr. T. Piper thing carrying into another year for the blow-off, ultimately, of their feud. But WrestleMania 2 would subsequently be at three different locations. And
I think we should tell people why. I mean, obviously, Starrcade 85, the gathering, which had happened, you know, just a few months earlier, had been from two. They did it from Greensboro and Atlanta.
Yeah.
And so Vince, you know, this is when he was really just getting nasty.
Right.
This is the Vince I like. Okay, this is the Vince who just took no prisoners. Anything any other promotion was doing, he was going to exploit that and squash them like a bug. So he's like, oh, okay, the NWO, well, I'll do three locations. And I'll do it, by the way, not from, you know, these I'm using kind of his mentality, these podunk towns down south. Okay,
right.
I'm doing New York, Chicago, and L.A., the three biggest markets in this country.
Right.
Now, it was a complete disaster.
Well,
everyone agrees that this show is a step back from the first one.
I would agree.
1986 was a great year. I believe 1986 is one of the finest years this company ever had.
Okay.
You would not know that by watching this show.
No, you wouldn't.
This show is bad.
And it's really interesting because, again, you talk about Starrcade 85. Crockett accomplished what he was looking to do there because 85 was the year of melding together what had been the old Mid-Atlantic territory and the old Georgia Championship territory, and it was held in, I don't know that you could necessarily, certainly Atlanta was the capital of the Georgia one.
Greensboro was his capital.
Yeah, that was the capital of Mid-Atlanta.
I was going to say Charlotte wasn't as big,
Greenville wasn't as big.
Yeah.
Okay.
But to
those are the two capitals. But Vince, you're right.
Friendly territory, though, when you think about Atlanta and Greensboro, he knew, I mean, those are, you know, I mean, he's still, that was not a national move. Vince was thinking nationally here.
Right.
Now, it did kind of come across as a big deal again, but logistically, and again, from an in-ring perspective, the first six matches on this show can be called nothing else but an unmitigated disaster.
Well, the other thing, Kyle, and this is interesting. I mean,
could you imagine buying tickets to one of these things? I mean, got to watch. They had the big screens set up so you could watch the rest of the show there. But God, if anyone's listening, could you send Ricky an email? What did you, if you went to one of these, what did you pay?
R. Morris at fantasydrafthelp.com. I'll look at that for the subsequent ones.
I would love to look that up. What tickets were to, because I'm not the kind of guy who's like, oh, that's a ripoff. I don't say that very often. Well, to me, if you want to do something, you attach your own. Being ripped off can only happen inside the individual, but to me, it's just like, God, this was just like, none of the individual venues really had a great, were great.
No, they weren't, but here's the thing also. For a product that was still predicated on closed circuit, and you're looking at movie theaters and different venues like
this
that.
This was on pay-per-view, though, was it not?
It might have been
limited. I mean, limited. The pay-per-view was very limited.
It was very limited.
Because the Wrestling Classic was on pay-per-view in the fall of 85.
Like a pilot program, beta testing, if you will. So primarily closed circuit. Here's what I would stipulate. I mean, if you're a fan sitting here, if you're a little Ricky or a little Kyle in Cleveland, or if you're out there in Pittsburgh or wherever you're at, you're watching 12 matches that are not in front of you. At the very least, if you're in one of those three cities, you're getting a third of the card live. That is a sell in a way that, like, when the whole thing's on pay-per-view and the choice is I'm going to sit on my ass in my living room and watch it, or I'm going to go watch a third of the card live, then it's a different story.
Yeah.
But if you got to leave the house anyways, I don't think it depressed the sales that much. I'm going to mention this also,
too. Like,
it's weird.
I very rarely will pay to go to some sort of live event and be like, that was a ripoff.
Right.
You know, I can't believe I, because, you know, I pick and choose pretty well what I'm going to attend.
Sure.
But for this, to me, I just couldn't have been, who knows. If I was a kid, I probably would, you know. If you're a kid, you see Hogan in the L.A. one, maybe you're happy. I don't know.
Maybe this is a coincidence, but of the three markets, I mean, you look at it and you go, New York, Chicago, L.A., the biggest markets, these are ones that have had, each of them has had numerous WrestleManias over a period of time. Here's what's interesting to me and coincidental, and I don't know if this means anything. All three were second-tier arenas in their market. Nassau, the Rosemont Horizon, and the L.A. Sports Arena.
That's funny you mention that because I was literally going to say it. I don't know if we're allowed to say this on the show.
Go ahead.
All shitholes. Okay.
Well, yeah,
I mean, they were
exactly.
The Nassau Coliseum, God bless you if you're a New York Islanders fan, okay, was one of the biggest dumps for three decades.
Right.
Rosemont Horizon, I can't even remember what it's called anymore. It's called something totally different.
Well, they still go there to this day. Is it the Allstate Arena now?
Yes,
I think
it
is.
Exactly,
yeah,
what it is.
I mean,
it's been highly renovated.
It's been renovated
because it was funny because I go to Chicago quite frequently. I'm like, what's the Allstate Arena? They're like, oh, that used to be the Rosemont Horizon.
Yeah,
I'm like, oh, okay.
And it's like way out there in the burbs too, I believe. Yeah.
Yeah, it's similar to kind of like with the Richfield. That's back in the day when you had something, you know, kind of like locally here at the Richfield Coliseum, and then the LA Sports Arena.
In the heart of South Central, you know, I understand that's where it's at anyways, but not in a great area.
That's where the Clippers used to play
before
they became tenants in the Lakers building,
so fans know. Back in the
day. Did the Clippers,
were they
in L.A. in 86, though?
Oh, they were. They were.
They just can't come there. They were.
No, they'd been there a few years from San Diego.
Yeah, they were Buffalo before.
Buffalo Braves before that. Yeah, the thing with L.A. is that back in the day, it had all been about the Forum. The Forum was the big place, whatever, and then around the turn of the century,
obviously, if you're a basketball, that's where the Lakers played.
Sure,
L.A. Forum was a very famous arena.
Lakers, and then I think the Kings played there also, too. But, yeah, no, but the L.A. Sports Arena was a real second-tier thing. So I don't know why that is in all three markets.
Maybe they were just scared because the live crowd was only going to be there. I mean, it was basically like not even. I mean, it was about an hour of action you got.
Yeah.
So, okay, you're going to get an hour of live wrestling. You're going to get to watch the other stuff, closed circuit. You're going to get format. Maybe they kind of just feared that they wouldn't be able to sell out the bigger places.
Maybe so. Now, this was a card.
I wish the little fellow was here so he could have the business numbers. The events live. Did they sell out everywhere?
He would know off the top.
Did they
of his
sell
head.
Out?
Yeah, I think so.
I don't think all three sold out. I do not think all three sold out.
According to Wikipedia, the combined attendance was 40,085 between the three arenas.
So that's under 15.
That sounds borderline, because none of these were huge arenas. I mean,
yeah,
they're all in the
20,
teens.
Yeah, you're right. None of them were 20,000 seats. Yeah,
yeah, so it's conceivable.
Yeah, I mean, look, they weren't. None of them were half empty. Okay,
right.
Which is what's
right.
important.
April 7th, 86.
I believe one of the later WrestleManias.
It was.
In the month, you know, in terms of the calendar year. It's
it tough. Was. Coincidentally, I think, isn't 29 in New York next year supposed to be April 7th? That might tie it for the latest one,
sure.
I think, possibly.
Sure.
I don't think it's ever been the 8th or later.
And I also think this show is like on a Monday. Was
yeah.
it? Am I dreaming that?
I think
does anyone have their 1986 calendar handy?
I think it may.
I don't think
well
this show
been.
Is on a Sunday.
Yeah, I think it may very well have been the case. This is a thing here. We'll talk about this. There was a little bit more on this show, largely because there was more matches. There was more in terms of matches that involved programs than there
yes.
was at WrestleMania
yeah,
1.
Yeah, that was the one positive direction it took
yeah.
from WrestleMania 1. I think when you talk about the evolution of WrestleMania.
Yeah, it was. By the way, too, and we'll talk about this in the subsequent episodes, I was thinking about this when you had mentioned your initial point about the house show or the house show thing here. I don't think it was until at some point in the mid to later 90s until there was basically almost the monthly pay-per-views and until the house shows had become decidedly an afterthought
yeah.
that WrestleMania became what we know today, which is every match has a purpose. That because you think into the 90s, I mean, even at WrestleMania 13 in 97, the Sultan against Rocky Maivia for the Intercontinental title. You want to tell me what program was involved in that one?
The company was having its... its share of issues going
Razor
into that
versus Bob Backlund at WrestleMania 9. Oh. Somebody want to quote me the extensive program that was involved in that? It's very interesting.
You're right.
It was a slow progression to what we know now.
I would agree. I mean, when you look at, again, it's so funny. You know, people want to, like, bag on the early WrestleManias mm-hmm. here. And, you know, people that are in our age group, you're a little older than me, obviously, but still, mm-hmm. I think we're in the same age. I still say yeah. we're in the same age group.
I'm immature for my age.
Yes.
So yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I'm 31, going on 12. Okay. Yeah. For evidence of that, you should see me last night. I was in rare form. Okay. All I needed was Ric Flair's robe. Okay. And then, all right. Anyway.
I hope you don't wear it like Ric Flair does in the bars.
Yeah. Yeah. But they largely didn't like to just do a major job on these shows. Mm-hmm. There was very rare. In the early, like the first 7 or 8, unless if they were just getting rid of you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, to you didn't do, like, the idea of, and, you know, I guess we could go here just momentarily. We don't want to get too far with feedback. But compare that to, like, a Monday Night Raw from last week, where you saw a guy like Mark Henry make his return from injury. Here's a guy who was the champion of this brand, the SmackDown brand, for many months.
Yeah.
Comes back just as a clean job. That never would happen in a
TV6. No, no.
And that's one thing about. To bring this back full circle, that I liked better about 1986 wrestling than today's wrestling. You shouldn't, like, I know that people don't want the old Eric Bischoff, Nitro, you know, 8 non-finishes in a show. But you got to be careful with that stuff, and they were very good. The early WrestleManias, and this is kind of where we started, I think, while they are kind of bagged on, are so much more well-booked than the newer ones.
They are.
I don't care what anyone says. The newer WrestleManias are much more style over substance, I think. Now, there are some phenomenal matches and phenomenal programs that involve them. I don't mean to denigrate the whole thing. But the shows, I think, largely were better booked early on in that it led somewhere. You know,
yeah.
I mean, and there are a lot of examples of the contrary. There are a lot of, you know, what is this doing? Here kind of stuff.
But, I would agree with that.
But, you know, I mean, here, you know, they looked to keep things over. They had a direction in mind. There was long-term planning involved. Basically
right.
Concepts that don't exist anymore.
Well, here's what I want to do. Since this is the only show of its kind with the three venues.
Okay.
You be the ticket-holding fan here for a second. You rank for me 1 through 3, the fan
New York
experience
is last.
Of the venues.
New All York, right. I, well, All you, right. you know me. I know these cards. I don't even need you to.
Yeah.
Let's be nice to the visitor. And you
okay.
can New York
right.
is last.
Yeah,
though.
Courtesy of Wikipedia here. Okay. From Nassau Coliseum, Paul Orndorff and the Magnificent Morocco with Mr. Fuji fought to a double countout.
Two guys that were very over, but there was no program here. And these guys were very eager, I think, to phone this one and collect their WrestleMania paycheck. I mean, just some token. My favorite part of this is when Paul Orndorff, you know, does the very racist thing with his eyes.
The slant eyes at Fuji.
Yeah, yeah. And drew a huge pop, by the way, just to show you where, you know, people were in 86.
From a crowd that would be cheering a quarter century later for Jeremy Lin. Yes. How times have changed.
Yes. Oh, I knew you were. I was like, how's Ricky going to work Jeremy Lin? And take that
yes.
Nate Doy. Okay, we're going to work him into these ones. Okay. But no, this was phoned in all the way.
Oh, totally. Intercontinental title match. This great program. Randy Savage, the champion with Miss Elizabeth, defeating George the Animal Steel. Former past lounge guest, by the way.
Yeah, me and the little fella. And now, I don't want to, you know, say that he liked it, because he didn't, but he made a good point. We had some spirited debates, some on air, some off, about this program. I hate this program, okay? This, to me, can you imagine with the internet and these message boards?
You said that
marks.
On SNS back in the day. I laughed so hard when you were
saying
that. Can
you imagine if they would have Randy Savage wrestling George Steele months on end? The complaining and the bitching that would go on? Can you imagine? Because it's like, okay, let's take a guy who was, and make no mistake about it, okay? Randy Savage, he came in the fall of 85. He was the man.
Right.
From an in-ring perspective in this company. He was the man. He was the number one guy in-ring in this company
he
during this
play. Dominated the second half of the decade in-ring, no question.
And to put him in there with
in the company.
The guy who, from, you know, what we kind of know as work rate and in-ring, was probably bottom five, probably.
Yeah.
And handicap him, too, with the storyline. Because if you've seen one, here's my problem. If you've seen one Randy Savage, George Steele match, you've seen them all. Okay, Steele starts out hot. Savage, you know, shows a lot of ass for him. Steele gets distracted by Elizabeth, runs around. Savage cheats and wins.
Here's what I want to say, and I agree with you that the program was not a good one.
And this was early on. This was only the, I think, second time out of about 722 that they wrestled this year.
I think it was.
They had wrestled on a Saturday's main event. And here's what's interesting, too. You talk about the house shows. Okay, again. Savage had just he came in very hot, challenged Hogan for the world title. Mm-hmm. Was not going over because Hogan is Hogan, and mm-hmm. nor should he have. Okay, yeah. Hogan. Okay, Hogan should not have lost the title to him, but he wins the Intercontinental title from Tito Santana about a month and a half before this show.
Right.
They didn't. There was no rematch here because they had what I believe to be the greatest house show program in the history of the company. After this, in yeah. MSG, do yourself a favor, kids. And if you most of the stuff you can find pretty easy on this YouTube, if you've heard of it, by the way. Okay, Savage and Santana, if I may expound for a minute here,
go
Ricky.
Ahead.
You talk about the best series of house show matches ever. They had a rematch right around this time period in MSG. And I think it goes to a disqualification finish. So the next month, we do no DQ. Okay? Let's talk about logical booking here, mm-hmm. okay, which has largely gone out the window in today's industry. All right? Savage kind of beats up on the ref, really manipulates the rules to win, does an awesome play, Jay. He bleeds a bucket in that match. Mm-hmm. That, to me, is the best one they had.
Mm-hmm.
April 86, kids, MSG. Savage says, I think it's April 22nd.
Okay.
So he's right after this show.
Right.
So, okay, he bullies the ref around. What do you do? Let's bring in special guest referee Bruno Sammartino the next month for May,
mm-hmm.
okay? I believe that goes to some sort of convoluted finish, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That involves Sammartino. Oh, Adrian Adonis got involved.
Okay.
So let's do a tag match the next month now, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Savage and Adonis versus Sammartino and Steele. Or Sammartino and Santana, pardon me. I think it was a count out. And then, Santana finally kind of gets his heat back in a way. Again, let's find a way to get everyone over. They had that great steel cage match, a tag team steel cage match. That was really rare.
Uh-huh.
And that's a real good one. And they win that. So,
well, that was a great job booking the program. When you're talking about great house show programs, of course, one of the things that would be on that same tier, we talked about it previously the previous year, that was Santana and Valentine.
They had
same thing.
Yes,
you did not have Santana wrestling for the belt at WrestleMania 1 or WrestleMania 2 because they were saving it for the house shows.
Yes, and house shows still mattered.
Yes.
There were some good house shows in 1986. Like I said, 1986, mm-hmm. you talk about the great years this company's ever had, top five, easily. I don't care what anybody says. I mean, not from an in-ring perspective necessarily, but from a long-term booking, from a star power perspective.
Business
was very obviously, the next year's WrestleMania is one of arguably the most famous ever. And it just a great year. And, but back to this match. Do you know what's interesting about this? This is something, too, that the Smarks would bitch about, this Savage Steel match.
What?
Steel kicks out of the flying elbow in this match. Did you know that?
I did not realize that.
No, he does. It's shocking.
Here's something that I'm going to say in defense, and not just because he was a guest on the show, but in defense of George Steele.
It was a gimmick,
The program didn't work, but here's the thing, though.
No, it did work. See, I'm wrong. I've come to learn the little fella brings up that, look.
It drew
a lot of the whole Elizabeth thing was just, people got into this storyline. Why? I don't know. Okay, but I'm in the minority here. I mean, I didn't like it. Okay.
But babyface or heel, and he was a heel for like 95%+ of his career.
Yeah, but everyone remembers the other five.
Right.
Here.
But, and we talked about that on the show. I mean, he said, I made my money off the 5%. I prefer the 95%. That was the part that I enjoyed creatively. But he was a guy built, ironically, a lot like another guy we're going to be talking about, Andre the Giant, as a special attraction. He was meant to be seen in small doses. George the Animal Steel is one of the greatest special attractions in the history of pro wrestling. He would come in, he would have, back in the day, these tremendous house show programs against Bruno Sammartino.
Yes.
This guy, in limited doses, presented that way, was terrific. You're talking about him under the glare of the national spotlight with Randy Savage in WrestleMania, he's just there, and that's not how he was meant to be used. Commercially, though, it did work. The next one here at Nassau, this is very interesting.
By the way, I think we should put over that at this point you want to rip your ears off with the commentary of Susan St. James, Dick Ebersol's wife, who was on a show, what was it, Kirstie Alley? Wasn't that the show she was on?
Something like
okay,
that.
Okay, I mean, it was a
Cagney and Lacey.
Yeah, it was one of those shows. By the way, 80s sitcom is much better than today's sitcoms, but it was one of those, like, it was around for a couple years. And what? Her and Vince McMahon. Okay, needless to say, there was not a tremendous knowledge of holds between the two of them, okay? Okay. All right. I'm surprised they remember, you know, leading to this next match, the DDT. I don't know if they had to have note cards down for that or what.
I like to see those two calling a Jumping Bomb Angels match, no question about it.
She looks very good. Yeah. What a maneuver.
What a maneuver. Yes. George the Animal Steel against Jake Roberts against George Wells. Jake the Snake Roberts against George Wells here, Master
this
G.
This is the kind of match that would squash. Never make it on a big show. This was kind of like we talked about with the WrestleMania 1, like the this was along the lines of a Steamboat over a Bourne or a Santana over Executioner.
And that was producer Steve's question. Didn't they have anybody better than George Wells? But here's the thing. They had the Battle Royal there. They did have it. And they wanted Jake Roberts to go over strong over somebody that didn't matter in the booking place.
Yeah, from him, we talk about they didn't – here's
– this is the philosophy.
An illustration we talked about that they didn't do – with a lot of eyes watching, they were very careful about just beating a guy bad.
Right.
George Wells didn't matter. They need – this is one of those few instances during this time period – where they just look, we need somebody to do a ultra, and a baby faces never in this era did like totally clean jobs. They need it. George Wells did nothing in this company. I mean, he was not around even for a year.
Yeah, but I mean, he was a lot like in the role of, and I'm struggling to think of a white guy that I could also say, but SD Jones, jobber to the stars. I mean, this is a guy he could win on TV against a pure jobber. But George Wells and SD Jones were jobbers to the stars.
Yes, and Jake Roberts was a hot. He was very new.
Point.
I mean, he was. That's the thing. He was very new. I mean, he hadn't even been in for a month.
Right.
I don't think he debuted at MSG like a week or two before this.
Right.
So he was. I mean, and again though, mission accomplished with this.
Right.
Jake, you know, I mean, the snake thing was, you know, a big deal. People would get when he, you know, DDT the guy and put the snake on him afterwards. That drew a lot of eyes and a lot of attention. And it worked. You know, he obviously, you know, was put over very strong here. He'd go on to do the Steamboat program starting in the spring, which is very good. So, you know, mission accomplished here. I mean, it's not good. I mean, the match.
Right.
I mean, it's a real blink and you'll miss it affair, would never be on a WrestleMania today.
But to answer Steve, it did what they wanted it to do the way they were approaching it at the time. The Nassau Coliseum main event, if you will, Mr. T with Joe Frazier and the Haiti Kid in his corner defeated Roddy Piper by disqualification with Bob Orton and Lou Duva, by the way, by disqualification.
Shame on Lou Duva, by the way, for his participation in this.
When Piper body slammed Mr. T.
Yeah, the luster of Mr. T had long gone.
They put him in there with Bob Orton on a Saturday night's main event to do a boxing match as a setup for this here. And
I'll tell you what, if you want to laugh real quickly, there's a Piper's Pit that sets that up where Orton had just it's one of those things that he just inexplicably started claiming he was a boxer. Orton, you know, he just started boxing people on the Cindies. And he had this open challenge, and Hulk Hogan shows up with he's saying, Mr. T, my friend Mr. T, Hogan gets this great line in there at the end. He's like, I pity you, fool. You've got to see it. It's pretty funny, actually. I got to give the devil's due there. But, Rick, this is terrible, this match. It's sort of amusing. Piper.
Little racist angle with shaving the Haiti Kid's head, by the way, in the mohawk.
Piper cuts, if I've got the version that's got all the interviews left in, not the Coliseum video, they clipped a lot. They think they clipped it down to 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
But I've got Roddy Piper cuts an incredible promo leading up to this thing. By the way, remember when we talked about WrestleMania 1? Piper, he was so cool as a heel. That happened here. The live crowd in Nassau was audibly chanting for Piper during this. The bloom was off the Mr. T Rose completely. The live crowd was totally cheering for Piper. I mean, he knocks him. First of all, if you're a boxer and watch this, I'm sorry. Okay, this was pretty embarrassing, this whole thing.
It was.
I mean, they were, like, selling, like, wrestling punches. It was pretty bad. But Piper knocks T down, and the crowd cheers very, very loudly.
On the Roddy Piper WWE documentary, they actually play that up, the Piper chants, and that was the seeds of the Piper babyface turn that would come later in the year.
Yeah, which, once again, a very rare, for that time period, organic base turn. That didn't happen. We're very accustomed to that happening now.
But you know what, though? That's the whole thing. It was the precursor of the cool heel. Flash forward to the NWO in the 90s. No selling, smart ass. You know, same kind of a thing. You're supposed to show ass when you're a heel. You're supposed to get the baby face over. That's part of your job. Piper,
by this point, he had kind of peaked as a heel. There was nothing really. He had kind of been feuding on and off with Hogan for over a year. So he had to go somewhere. And he did take time off, I think.
He was doing the movie.
Yeah, he did They Live, I think. Yeah. Right. Because he was gone from here until August. He came back in August, right before they changed from Championship Wrestling to famous and well-known syndicated show, the Superstars of Wrestling and Wrestling Challenge. He was gone for about 4 months after this, and the crowd, it was funny because I don't know if they were expecting, because when he comes back and he wrestles this, what's the guy's name? It's like A.J. Petruzzi is the guy's name he wrestles. And have you ever seen? You've seen this probably. He comes back and the crowd just goes crazy for me, and he's kind of like looking out like, wow, they're turning me.
Yeah.
And Petruzzi slaps him, and it's the match where Piper puts his hand behind his back and beats him up with one hand behind his back.
I haven't seen I've never seen it.
It's pretty funny. It's pretty good.
That whole thing, that's another thing where Piper was the pioneer of the comeback pop. He got the comeback pop when he was
Right. That's something that...
Things that would later manifest themselves regularly.
Yeah, that's something that, you know, we just take for granted now, that whenever a major name comes back, he's just cheered because people are happy to see him back.
Right.
But in this, I think people... was a little different. It wasn't just a cut. People were like, we've booed this guy for 2 years. He's pretty good.
By the way, too.
He's pretty entertaining.
And there's another thing. The thing that allowed him to go head-to-head at the War of the Settle the Score with Piper, or with Hogan in the middle of the ring exchanging punches. I have to tell you this, again, I have become, over a period of time, I've watched a ton of wrestling like you. You've watched a lot more than me, but I'll tell you one thing that's happened with me that probably hasn't happened to you. I have become incredibly, incredibly unobservant about physiques. I don't notice anything because I'm just like, okay, ever since the mid-80s, everybody's jacked up, whatever. I don't notice nuances. I was blown away when I saw the Piper DVD. I'm just used to seeing him as this guy who's much littler or whatever. Yeah. He was roided to the gills. His neck was the size of my thigh. I'm going, that's Roddy Piper? I'm remembering this scrawny little guy in the late 90s exchanging punches with the NWO. Holy crap, when that guy had the needle in his ass in 85, and I never realized it at the time.
I think George Zahorian was standing right behind the curtain.
God, was he roided.
And the thing, what's funny is...
His neck was enormous.
And the thing is compared to the other fellas...
Yeah.
That big. But, I mean, compared to, like, what you said...
Yeah.
Or compared to a normal person, he was huge. And people don't associate Roddy Piper with being big. You know, he's scrawny. He was kind of... You know, it wasn't his care. I mean... He was a tough. He was portrayed as a tough guy, but you're right. I mean, yeah. Even he was. You know, there was almost no one, with the exception of like a George Steele or a Jake Roberts too, also on the show, that wasn't juiced to the gills during this period. Allegedly.
Yeah, exactly. I am unobservant to an extreme. So I mean, this is going to make you laugh, but like years ago when it first came out, when I first heard. You know, the John Cena had been like, his big bodybuilder back in the day. I was like, really? Because, like, I just saw him as, a lot of it is that, he wears his shirt except for when he's in the ring. But I'm just like, he's a goofy white kid, rapper guy, whatever.
He's a
dude. The first time
I saw him. You don't notice it with him. I mean.
No, but it was like the next time I saw him with his shirt, I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, he is pretty jacked. But it's like, I just don't notice hardly anything.
Well, that's because.
Comically unobservant
about
physique.
That's because, first of all wrestlers are bigger than the average Joe.
Sure.
Okay? But if it's not, I think it's to a point, and it started with this time period, where if it's not like the Warlord or Ezekiel Jackson, then you really kind of take it for granted.
Yeah. Man, my eyes just play tricks on me. So that was the Nassau part.
An awful portion.
The Mr. T main event.
There's not one match that breaks. Little snowflakes. Here's the Kyle Rush, love, Ricky. There's not one match on this portion of the program that broke one star.
What's the least bad of those four? Let me challenge you here. Probably just for the spectacle, right? Savage and Steel. for
it might be.
Else.
I mean, I think by the way, Piper T, Dave Meltzer, come on, get off your high horse. They gave it negative 5 stars, okay? I mean, look, it was still, what did you expect, Hagler Hearns? I mean, come on.
Right.
All right, but so yeah. That was terrible. You throw that out. The other two are like half, you know, I guess, just because Savage goes over?
Orndorff and Morocco, I mean, to use your line about Hall.
Yeah, I mean, they foamed this puppy in, I mean, from the minute. I mean, they were like, hey.
They had a 5 spot in their hand waiting for the first Jack and Coke at the bar.
Yeah. I mean, a double count off. I mean, you talk about late. I mean, again, they were protecting
horrible.
Both guys.
Yeah.
And both guys, Morocco just main evented a Saturday Night's main event against Hogan. Orndorff was obviously going to go on to very big things later in 86. He was kind of stuck in no the novelty of the face turn had kind of worn off, and he was going to go heel again.
And we would accept non-finishes back in the day because it was indicative of what you'd find at house shows. You'd have at least one or two non-finishes, maybe.
Yeah, both guys were old, but I don't know. I can't. How about this? I refuse to name a best match.
Okay. All right. I'll say Savage Steel by default. From the Rosemont Horizon, in a minute and 25 seconds, the champion, Fabulous Moolah, defeated Velvet McIntyre, the women's champion.
I think this was booked to go longer, and this is urban legend. Velvet McIntyre's strap on her outfit broke.
Okay.
And so they just ended it.
Unlike today's divas, that wouldn't be anything you'd want to see.
Yeah. I'm telling you. I mean, baby. I mean, and this ain't the Super J Cup, is it, here?
No.
This WrestleMania 2. I mean, into the first 6 matches, we've covered 5 now. I mean, awful. The first half, there is not one match. There's 12 matches on the show total.
Well,
the first half, there's not one of the first 6 that breaks a star.
Business is not picking up with this next one here. Corporal Kirchner defeated Nikolai Volkoff with Freddie Blassie in a flag match in 2 minutes and 5 seconds.
This was sort of, you know, Kirchner, they brought him in to fill the void of Slaughter.
Yep.
When Slaughter left. Even though I think it wasn't right away, but, you know, he was kind of, Kirchner was in that, he was kind of the go-between of two guys who were far more successful in that role, Sergeant Slaughter and then Jim Duggan.
Yeah.
You know,
Kirchner wasn't as good. And second of all, just from a kayfabe perspective, he's a corporal. If you're replacing the sergeant, shouldn't it at least be with a colonel or a general or a captain or somebody?
You're thinking a little bit too much of this. But he also, I'll tell you, he does do a look ma, I'm blading right on camera here in this match. I mean, jeez, Kirk. I mean, I'll tell you, I'm sure that cameraman got 86 right after. I mean, he pulls the blade right out and does it on camera. By the way, you got to give it to him. I'm bleeding in a 2-minute match. How about that? Talk about dedication to the craft.
That really is.
Then, you know, Nikolai Volkoff was atrocious during this. By this point. Kirchner, I think that like the Kane was involved again. You know, Kirchner got it. Blink and you'll miss it. I mean, it's unbelievable too how fast those two matches go.
Yeah, minute 25, 205.
I mean, you come to Chicago. It's Gorilla Monsoon, Gene Okerlund, and Kathy Lee Crosby or whatever.
Yes,
I mean, you're like, okay. And, like, in 5 minutes, the first 2 matches of the 4 are over.
Right.
I mean, can you imagine, again, this goes back, can you imagine if you paid, you're going to see 4 matches. Now, granted, those were the 2 you probably cared the least about anyway.
Right.
I mean, no one cared about Moolah McIntyre, okay?
Yeah.
All right. Kirchner Volkoff had, you know, the usual xenophobic wrestling angle behind it.
Right.
But half of your thing is over in, like, 5 minutes.
That's true. Now, the next one went 9-13. This card blows chunks so badly that this next one is probably better than the rest of them put together, and it's nothing to write home about. The 20-man Battle Royal, Andre the Giant defeating 19 other participants, including some pro football players here, Ernie Holmes, Refrigerator Perry,
and that
Russ
was the big
Francis.
One. Refrigerator Perry, because this was
wait, Bruno Sammartino also? Bruno was in this?
He was. This was a pretty loaded.
Harvey Martin?
Yeah, wow. they had some guys who were employed.
Jimbo
inactive,
Covert.
Yeah. Bill Frelick, I thought, gave a tremendous performance. This the defensive rookie of the year, okay, that year for the Falcons. He cut a pretty good promo, actually, on John Studd before this. But this, to me, is the kind of mainstream exposure.
Yeah.
And you know, I can't remember, because like I said, I wasn't watching, I don't know how much is true, that they'd kill for now. You know, Refrigerator Perry, I think there was some real back and forth negotiate.
Yeah.
They really, because you know, if you're a football fan, you
got
to remember
that got
this
over
was
huge.
Yeah, this was right after the Bears won the Super Bowl.
Kids, he was the Jeremy Lin of the spring of '86.
Yeah, yes, yes, yes. He was, and this was in Chicago. He drew a huge, And it was, yeah, they brought Bruno back because Bruno was working the house shows during this period.
Okay.
Against Savage.
Okay.
He had wrestled against Savage, and then he would, you know, that would continue. He had wrestled against Piper, too, in late 85. I think they did some cage matches,
they
if memory serves me correct.
After Piper called him a WAP.
Yeah. Piper's awesome. 85, 86, Piper's awesome. But, yeah, this was, and again, this is not a good match. I mean,
no.
Battle Royals are generally pretty lazy, but it puts over Andre, who, starting at this point, was beginning to deteriorate.
Yeah.
He took a lot of time off because he did... He did the Princess Bride right after that.
Right.
He also left to do a movie.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. His condition was really starting to deteriorate.
When he no-showed, and we'll talk about this leading up to three. When he no-showed the shows, was he in a little bit of a contract dispute with Vince to where it got to the suspension and the giant machine? Is that what
that was totally kayfabe.
That was a total work.
That was
okay.
A total work.
Oh, all right.
Yeah,
all
it was a total work to get him off. And
oh, all right.
They had, I believe, the decision, I'm assuming, right. had already been made. I don't know. I don't know if
okay.
there's any contract issues. But the bottom,
okay.
it was, well.
I thought that might have
you know,
started
they did
a
have, they
shooting.
Did have, they always said they had a backup plan of Hogan Orndorff for WrestleMania 3.
Yeah, after they had already killed it five times around the horn. I'm
yeah,
sure
well, I'm glad they didn't do that. They shouldn't
right.
have. I mean, they made the right decision.
That
would have
been horrible.
But,
that's a match you could have fit the crowd in Cobo Hall after people had seen that five times.
Well, I think the show did huge numbers before Hogan Andre was even announced. I mean, they had a pretty big advance before that was
well,
even
maybe
announced.
Maybe so, maybe
but
so.
But still, but anyway, we could talk about that when we
yeah.
talk about the build-up to three. But, yeah, Andre was still babyface here. This was kind of his, you know, dying days as a babyface.
Right.
He was the clear choice to get put over here.
Right.
He beats the Hearts.
This was his last great moment as the big babyface. Yeah, he beat Neidhart and then Bret Hart at the end there, eliminating them in succession. Speaking of tag teams, I guess this would be, well, for public perception, the main event, I think, from
it was
the
clearly
Rise,
the, Battle,
was the
Royal.
Battle Royal.
Yeah, because, I mean, you had the Bears in there. Perry's
right.
teammate Jim Covert was in this
right,
thing.
Right, you had that.
And by the way, I should say, Perry was a big deal. The highlight of this, they had that great spot where him and John Studd got into it.
Right.
The crowd was hot for that.
It was hot.
I mean, they were hot.
It was hot. They wanted Perry to win.
They were right not doing that, by the way.
Sure,
they,
sure.
Today, of course,
they
they're so gutless they probably would. But.
Oh, God, this is the same. Didn't they have... They had Kevin Federline pin John Cena years ago, didn't they? I believe.
Yeah, I think they did.
Yeah, so I mean that tells you about you know the way that they approach things now. The first
I miss K-Fed.
I always said at the time the problem was that he and they weren't in on the joke. If they would have used him as like a Vicky Guerrero heat magnet, that would have been one thing. They treated him like an actual friggin' celeb.
Yeah.
They
yeah.
weren't in on the joke.
Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah.
The first real epic match, as you
yes.
said in your notes, in the history of WrestleMania,
yeah.
British Bulldogs finally, this was the blow-off match. They win the tag team titles from the Dream Team of Valentine and Beefcake with Johnny Valiant in their corner. And the Bulldogs, of course, had Captain Lou and Ozzy Osbourne in their corner.
Who I believe was drugged out of his mind.
this being a typical day in 1986, I'll agree with you.
Yes, I mean, it's so funny. They interview after the match. They're like, Ozzy, what do you think? This was great, wasn't it? And he just mumbles some unintelligible garbage. And Gene Okerlund.
Sure!
Yeah, Gene Okerlund just has a look on his face like, okay, I'm not asking him a second question.
Yeah.
But, no, this was, again, you talk about something that was, they had gone around on the house shows for
uh-huh.
months leading up to this. Even before this became a TV program. People got to remember, you know, these two teams had worked against each other a lot in the second half of 85.
But right.
You talk about something that would never happen. This shows you how much different, how much more patient they were, and how they could afford to be more patient. They couldn't afford to be this patient in today's marketplace.
Right.
The Bulldogs came in right after WrestleMania 1, like we talked about earlier. And they were just so, I mean, the outcry, we talk about kind of jokingly, oh, the smart marks, the message board, the internet.
By
I mean,
late 85, everybody wanted them to have the belts yesterday.
By late 85, Ricky, I mean, today,
yeah.
I mean, people would have demanded, like, in
yeah.
the third match that
right.
they win the title, okay?
Right.
I mean, they were so over. They did that move, and they didn't do it a lot on TV. They did it on the house shows. Remember that move they did? Because the Briscoes have kind of, the Briscoe brothers in Ring of Honor have kind of taken it where Davey Boy would have the guy pressed up on his shoulders. Mm-hmm. Dynamite would jump off them and do a headbutt onto the other opponent.
Yeah.
It was I mean, these guys, they were doing stuff that was just they were so ahead of every other team.
The snap super suplex. Yeah. The suplex where you hold the guy forever.
Yeah. I mean, they were so over. And you're right. It took them a full year to win the belts.
Amazing.
I mean, people. Now, amazing. Granted, when they first came in, Sheik and Volkov had the title, but that was a cup of coffee situation where
right.
you knew the belts were going back to Windham and Rotundo,
right?
So they couldn't beat another babyface team. Beefcake and Valentine get put together. Basically, Valentine loses the Intercontinental title to Santana.
Yeah,
and it was one of those situations, kind of like the Dream Team, by the way, is kind of an underrated team. Because Greg Valentine did 95% of the work, which is point of the team.
Right.
They always, for whatever reason, were very high on Beefcake. I mean,
right.
a friendship.
Hogan's boy, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he was awful as a singles wrestler
right.
when he first came. I mean, you thought he was bad in, like, 88. Well, he actually got good, like, before the Paris. Not awesome. I mean, he wasn't Ricky Steamboat, but he
right.
got pretty.
Past lounge guest, but I got to be honest. He had some brutal matches.
Yeah, especially early on. So
yeah.
He was really green. Valentine talked about this all the time in interviews. Valentine was the old savvy veteran, so it worked out pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
And they were a good team, but, yeah, it turned into a TV angle where the Bulldogs crushed him in this non-title match, and this was billed as the Bulldogs' last shot at it, and they win.
They did a thing on Saturday night's main event, did they not, where they wrestled one another, and it was the whole bumping heads thing, and one of them fell on the Bulldog and pinned him?
Yes, that was that was the Saturday Night's main event. A pretty good match.
Yeah,
not as good as this one.
Yeah,
fluke
win.
It was it was the Bulldogs were dominating. Yes,
yeah.
Good call, Ricky. It was the one where they did the Hogan Bundy angle. It was one in Phoenix where Mr.
That's
T
right.
against Bob Orton. It
right.
was on that show that they did. You're right. So they did that. The Bulldogs won the non-title match, lose Saturday Night's main event. This is billed, final opportunity.
Yep.
So this was a blow off.
Yep,
and. The Dream Team, kind of, did nothing after this until they broke up the next year. But, it's amazing, though, to me that they could wait a full year to put the title on the Bulldog.
That was truly...
But this is the first four-star match in the history of WrestleMania.
Yes, which single-handedly, I'm sure, elevates it above the Nassau portion of the proceedings here.
Yes, this single-handedly makes Chicago better than Nassau.
Okay, all right.
Single-handedly.
Now, the final question as we wrap this up is whether or not L.A. was better. Here's the four L.A. matches from the L.A. Memorial Sports Arena. Ricky Steamboat defeated Hercules Hernandez in 7 minutes and 27 seconds. The same Hercules Hernandez who would go on to steal Rookie of the Year for Metal Maniac in 1992.
Are we doing this again?
Yes.
People have said there was a rumor. I think Bret Hart was the one who started it. That originally it was going to be Steamboat and Hart on this show.
Yeah.
They did do a how. It wouldn't have mattered for business.
Right.
I mean, for people like us, it's a reason, to put it on and a good match or whatever, but it wouldn't have mattered for business.
I think I saw them on Primetime Wrestling once from Boston. I think it was...
Yes, they did. And I was about to say they did. And it is a good match.
It is a good match.
But, for this, the Hart Foundation, they really didn't actually get... I mean, granted, they were in there kind of like token guys for Andre to throw out to do a babyface comeback on at the Battle Royale, but they weren't really over anyway. So, Bret could have afforded to do the job. Hercules was, as always, in that perpetual state of just mid-card nothing.
Here's what Bret, of all people, should have understood if he thought that was the case. Back in the day, the way that Vince saw these guys, if you were in a tag team, you didn't get your own deal. I mean, I think in many cases, if your partner was injured, I think you were both off the road.
They would plug someone in. They'd plug someone in.
Yeah.
They'd plug someone in for you. So... Yeah, it doesn't matter. I mean, this match is okay. I mean, to be honest with you.
7:27, it sounds like it drags, though. Hercules going 7:27.
God, 7 minutes is not that long of a wrestling match. If you get to a 7-minute wrestling match, you stink.
I've seen Hercules matches, though.
I know, but the Steamer was real good at this
point.
Yeah,
Steamer could carry anybody.
And he showed it. So, when it happened, it was the second best match on the card behind the Bulldogs. I mean, it's
interesting.
Not, yeah.
Okay, well, the next one here. In 301,
we need to point out the excellent commentary team here of Jesse Ventura, Lord Alfred Hayes, and Elvira. I mean, that's the one thing about doing three venues. You have to split up the announce team. Jesse handling play-by-play was kind of bizarre.
We should have a fill-in-your-own-joke routine from here. You know, Jesse Ventura, Lord Alfred Hayes, and Elvira walk into a bar. Take it from here, kids.
Yes, yeah. And they put a select. By the way, we didn't even mention Gorilla Monsoon. The whole, I loved Gorilla Monsoon, one of the most subtle barriers of all time, crushing Kathy Lee Crosby during commentary.
Well, and
giving her nothing, by the way.
Wasn't Ernie Ladd, according to Wikipedia, one of the Chicago commentators as well?
Just for the Battle Royal, because he was a football player.
Oh, okay.
And you talk, God, Gorilla Monsoon, Ernie Ladd, and Kathy Lee Crosby. Because Gene Okerlund introduced everyone.
With Vince's sense of condescension towards people. Hey, Ernie Ladd, there's some black guys in this match. You might know something about that. I could see Vince being enough of a racist to have that attitude. You know that's how Vince looks at the world. You know Vince is a big enough racist.
He probably had something to do with it.
Probably thought that if he didn't say it. Okay. Yes. All right. So in the next match, 3 minutes and 1 second, you talk about Steamboat being good enough to carry Hercules. Was Adrian Adonis with Jimmy Hart good enough to carry Uncle Elmer to a 3 minutes and 1 second match?
He tried.
Okay.
He bumps all. I mean, this match is basically 2 minutes and 30 seconds of Adonis bumping and then Elmer missing a big move and Adonis getting a very clean win.
On a short – Adrian Adonis
right,
on a
tell
short
you
list with Dusty Rhodes and I'm trying to think who else. Greatest fat man bumps of all time.
I'm going
to
tell you
Buddy
something.
Rhodes, too.
Historically, I seem to be in the minority of people who enjoyed adorable Adrian Adonis. I thought it was so shameless. I thought he had just gotten so hideously out of shape, but who cares? I mean, it's not my cholesterol. I mean, you know
right.
what I'm saying? I thought he was, he would get far more entertaining now. You know, this summer, it was kind of funny. We talk about how Piper took the time off.
Right.
This was a match, again, accomplished its goal. They needed to put Adonis over.
Right.
Big here. And Uncle Elmer, by the way, stuck.
Right.
Uncle Elmer would have been the most maligned person.
Who had the finest work rate among the hillbillies?
It was kind of funny, too, because Vince...
I'm going to go for underrated Vince, worker Cousin Luke.
Yes. Vince had the big hillbilly fetish always. He thought they were just so funny, you know, hillbillies. He had kind of given up, I think, because there was a bit of a backlash. If you remember, there was a Cernit's main event before this, not the Phoenix one, but it was even before that, where they jobbed them to Piper, Orton, and Ventura, I want to say. Because they'd done the Hillbilly Wedding. Remember, that was like his big thing. And there was a big backlash. So it was cool. They jobbed Elmer. Adonis, though, got the huge push over the summer of 86. Remember, because Piper left.
Right.
So Piper's pit was gone. And they brought in the flower shop, the very faggy flower shop. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that. You can edit
Go
that.
Ahead.
Okay.
No,
all right. All right.
I added nothing.
Okay,
Go ahead.
Okay. All right. I mean, not that there's anything wrong with that, but and that worked great. That to me, and we'll talk about this a lot when we talk about WrestleMania 3, is my all-time underrated feud, the Piper Adonis feud.
That was a very good feud.
Yes, and so this, I mean, yeah, it was real short, but it accomplished. You know, you needed to put Adonis over strong because he got a mega push in 86.
Right.
And I thought he did a good job with it.
All right.
I don't know.
Well, you said that this next match was better probably than I remember it being in some people. Terry and Hoss Funk with Jimmy Hart defeating.
And by Hoss, we mean Dory Funk
Jr.
Vince McMahon, of course.
Yeah.
Why the Terry could be called, you know, use his real name, but Dory had to be Hoss. I don't know.
They defeated the JYD and Santana in a tag team match in 11:42.
This is a good match. This is a genuine. I think
so. You're saying that like he basically turned the Funks loose to do what they could do because they were notorious in that run for not getting a whole great opportunity to do what they did when they were in the NWA World Champions.
Yeah, look, it's not. I mean, if you're looking from that perspective, they weren't at that level.
Okay.
I don't think this match is that far off
from
the Bulldogs' dream team. I think it's pretty
cool. I'll have to rewatch that. Okay.
This, I'm telling you, Ricky, do yourself a favor. This is kind of a lost classic in WrestleMania. I mean, I'd give it 3¾ stars. There's some good brawling.
Somebody using the term lost classic with Funks in the WWF at the time? Wow, okay.
I'm telling you, this match is pretty
good. Okay.
I enjoy that. This is easily the second best match on the show.
You know your biz, Kyle Ross.
Easily.
So, okay.
Okay, easily the second. I mean, Funk is great. Terry Funk sells unbelievably in this
all
match.
Right.
JYD had not yet morphed into the junk food dog, which we'll talk about at WrestleMania 3.
Trademark Dave Meltzer.
Yes, okay. And Santana was kind of, we talked about this, he was just kind of thrown in here as kind of a token baby face.
Lucky baby face.
Yeah, because JYD was feuding with the Funks at this period. This was, again, a feud. You know, they talk about they did do programs here with JYD. And this, again...
Well, the branding iron came into this feud, did it not?
Yeah. I mean, Funk had challenged Hogan. I mean, Funk, you know, he got some opportunities. People like act like Terry Funk's run was nothing. He wrestled Hogan
more
on
TV. Vince's famed racial sensitivity, bringing the branding iron into a JYD feud.
Well, of course, but... and... I mean, and this sets up, again, moving forward, because the Funks go over here. They cheat. They use the megaphone. It leads into the next Saturday night's main event where Hogan steps in for Santana, and it's Hogan and you know, JYD kind of wins the feud. It's Hogan and JYD beating the Funks. So, again, fits into a bigger picture, this.
What was the over-under on Terry Funk using the word property in a promo with JYD?
I don't know. I'll have to go back and count it.
Through the racially sensitive eyes of 1986 WWF. And, of course, the main event of L.A. and the main event of the show in a steel cage match, Hulk Hogan, the WWF champion, defeating King Kong Bundy in only 10 minutes and 15 seconds.
Again, though, I mean, they didn't do Broadways. I mean, 10 minutes,
no.
You know, the 20-minute matches... And I'm going to bring this point up when we talk about Savage Steamboat, WrestleMania 3. They just didn't do it.
Right. Hogan selling the ribs, had the ribs taped up.
Yeah,
in the cage.
They did. This was kind of the prototype. Prototype.
It was the blue metal cage, not a steel cage.
I like that. Yes. This was, this kind of, I think this started that trend, by the way.
Yeah.
Because from their perspective, though, they thought that cage, and I know it's been much more, was better for TV.
Telegenic.
You could see through. Whereas, you know...
No, fences look cheap, too. I mean, they just do.
Yeah. Now, there was a little blood in here, Bundy-bladed. But this was the prototype for every Hogan versus Fat Heel program that would come for the next, 10 years, basically.
Yeah.
But they did the big angle in Phoenix and started its main event where Bundy attacks Hogan after the Morocco match, injures his ribs... he sells the injury, comes back, takes the match, it's a standard hold. This is not one of the better WrestleMania main events at all. I mean, I think it's one of the most forgettable. I mean, if you were to rank every WrestleMania main event based on, not even necessarily based on any way you rank it, this is going to be one of the last. Certainly from a, in-ring perspective, it's one of the worst. But even from it kind of suffers from the fact of the next year's WrestleMania.
Yeah, not much historical significance.
Yeah, I mean, this
pales in comparison to 1 and 3.
Yeah.
And even 4 with Savage getting elevated and 5 with Savage Hogan.
Yeah, I mean, this.
Boy, out of all this is the most forgettable of the early ones.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably not until you get to Hogan's Slaughter at 7 that you get a more forgettable one.
Yeah, you're right.
I mean, because at
that.
Least I'm with that one. I mean,
which would also come from the LA sports.
Yeah, yes. Yes, unfortunately, although Saddam Hussein did not get involved with this particular show, WrestleMania 2. I guess there was some intrigue, but overall, WrestleMania 2, we talk about WrestleMania 1's legacy. I view it as kind of a glorified house show. The celebrity main event was a big success. This show, I think everyone agrees, was a step back from the first WrestleMania.
Right.
I agree with that. And to me, there are very few WrestleManias worse than this one.
All right, last question before we wrap on 2 here. Better part of the card, Chicago or L.A.?
I knew you were going to ask me that.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Chicago's got the best match with the Bulldogs and the Dream Team.
But then L.A. has the Funks and the main event.
Yeah, so it's kind of, and that main event was more intriguing than a Battle Royal.
Right.
And the other two, I don't know, it's kind of close. The bottom line is, when you're debating between those two segments, it ain't the 94 Super J Cup, like I like to say.
No, it ain't. All right. No, it ain't. By the way, so as not to leave anybody hanging from an earlier story, just to give you a thread here at the end here, the other incident that I had when I was ring announcing in 96, an indie wrestler, if you've ever heard of him, he's probably long since faded from the scene, a guy named Ronnie Dice Man Vegas. And the gimmick was that the crowd was supposed to chant Greaseman. Was it Greaseman or Greaseball? I know it was Greaseball.
Okay.
And it's supposed to, he had the slick back hair and everything like that.
Well, it was like Vinny Vegas or something like that?
Yeah, kind of. Okay. I mean, it was sort of a cross between him and Randy Savage as far as the gear went and everything like that. So, you know, the fans are chanting, you know, Greaseball. And I'm holding up the mic near them because I'm sort of like sensing. Like, nobody told me ahead of time, but like a good performer, I'm picking up on this. And he's reacting to it. So I'm like, okay, all right, so I'm supposed to keep doing this. We keep doing it, keep doing it. Culminates with him chasing me around the ring.
I really wish I could have seen
this. My parents who were at the show, you know, indicated that they thought I probably soiled myself, to which I the only thing I've ever conceded is I knew I was supposed to keep running. There was the pressure of if I stumble, he's going to have to at least throw some worked punches at me, and I didn't want that.
Okay, yes.
So, yeah, was I soiling myself at least a little bit? I mean, I knew the dude wasn't going to kill me, but I knew that if
That's
I stumbled
a great story.
And fell,
does
he'd have to do something.
Does this exist on YouTube?
This does not exist on YouTube. Now it does.
Okay, you know, Ronnie the Dice Man Vegas
Ronnie
versus
the Dice
Rick
Man
Morris.
Vegas,
okay.
Yes.
I need to see
in
this.
Lorraine in 96, in the winter of 96 in Lorraine. Yeah. Other great stories,
was
too.
Was Jeff Galooly involved in any?
He was not. Also, a local area indie wrestler named Frankie Stiletto that would do the best Iron Sheik imitations in the back. Go get Sheiky a beer! There were just some great things.
Where did this compare to the Euclid, that famed Euclid Power Plant show featuring Mick Foley that me and the little fella covered that one time?
I wasn't at that one. Was that the same night as Alimony Jack's?
Yes.
Oh, my.
Yes.
And seeing the demolition picture on the wall.
The little Phil's talking. Yeah, he's macking on some chick that he knows. And I like, I'm just like kind of like minding my own business. And I see a devil in it, and I start elbowing, like, dude. No, I said it to Jake Digman. That's it, because
okay.
Jake was there. I was like, Jake. There's a picture of demolition above the wall. It's awesome. But
I'm sure Digman was marking out like there was no tomorrow for that.
Yeah, I'll never forget Nick Foley's commentary. Well, we were expecting a few more people here tonight, but that's okay.
Well, I think this pretty much says it all about WrestleMania 2. We can only give the people a satisfactory ending here with some indie scene anecdotes at the end. That's how bad WrestleMania 2 was.
Yes.
Put a nice little bow on it.
Yes.
We had to embellish a little bit more.
I will definitively say this is the fourth worst WrestleMania of all time.
Fourth worst. All right. Well, it only gets better from here. This has been part one of the 9-part Kyle Ross History of WrestleMania anthology. Next up is going to be WrestleMania 3. Stay
tuned.
God
help us all.